of the mystery that is that which is more than ourselves in a way that a four-year-old could immediately understand and relate to. And as I struggled for a quick answer, the child, as children so often do, she answered her own question and said, "I don't believe in God." Great. Now we had a starting point for a conversation. Because the whole "does God exist" is a kind of laden one. What sort of God are we talking about? An embodied one? God of the trees and the stars and the moon? God within each other? Or does the word God simply have no resonance for some of us at all? When I first felt called, and I do use that term called, to seminary, my then partner was more than a little bit confused. "But you're an atheist," she emphatically reminded me, as though I didn't know this. "Why would you leave your comfortable life to follow a call which you can neither fully explain and don't entirely understand?" And I wasn't able to answer that question to either her satisfaction or my own. "I don't know," I confessed. "I just know I need to do this." So I did. For the first half of the program, for the first 18 months, it's a 3-year program, I spent my days and my nights working harder and studying more than I ever had before. I was tired and I was frazzled, and I felt like my soul was being pulled apart in ways that were not particularly comfortable. And this came to a head one night over dinner. She gently looked at my tired and bedraggled face and said, "Stop fighting it." "Fighting what?" I asked, completely lost in this segue in our dinner conversation. "God," she said. "Stop fighting God." And while I wouldn't have used the God language, she was mostly right. I was resisting opening myself up to that which I couldn't name, to mystery, to spirit, to Gaia. I was scared, kind of terrified, at that which I could neither name nor understand. And for me, it's been an evolution ever since. I began to listen to what theologian and educator Parker Palmer calls that still, small voice within. That which goes beyond the notion of right and wrong and which guides us from a place of our own deep knowing, our own truth. And I know you know what I mean. There are moments when we do something and we get that strong internal no. You've gotten this, right? Yes, you've got. Okay, thank you. Perhaps we ignore that voice and we do it anyway, or maybe we listen to the voice. And personally, I'll attest that my life runs better when I listen to that voice. It doesn't lead me astray. And just to give you but one example, if I hadn't listened to that voice, I wouldn't be here today as your minister. Now, here's the part that I'm less sure of. Is that God, or is it spirit, or is it my own internal subliminal desires? And I don't know. What I do know, and what you know, is that there are moments in our lives that defy logical explanation. I name it as God, or spirit, or love, because I'm using shorthand, because I'm trying to find one word, but there's really not a better word for it than the word Art used earlier, mystery. A mystery is something we don't know. And if we did know it, it would lose its charm, its excitement, and our fascination with it. The beauty is in the not knowing. And at least we as Unitarian Universalists tend to find that to be so, although there are more literal faith traditions that differ with our desire to explore the not knowing. Many of you, when you talk about what first brought you to Unitarian Universalism, you cite our fourth principle in some measure, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. It's in asking the questions, in having an evolving sense of answers, and of being open to the possibility of new information. These are the hallmarks of a committed Unitarian Universalist. And Santa, you really are distracting in the best possible way. The beauty, I believe, of being part of a Unitarian Universalist faith community is that nothing is off the table. What we understand as mystery ranges from astronomy to Wiccan to confirmed atheist to pantheism to more traditional Protestant understandings to Judaism and well beyond. Now, this, of course, leaves for an incredibly wide-ranging and varied understanding of God, of mystery, and of spirit. And that's right and good. And despite this diversity of faith, we do share some assumptions, I believe. I think most of us here would agree that we understand evolution rather than creationism. I think we value freedom over rules. And I think many of you have come here, as did I, because it gives me more room to show up as my whole self. But there's always room for more to be revealed. I was at the gym last week, you know, the kind with television so you can manage to do your elliptical and not get too bored. And I was watching the show called, I think, What If? And it asked questions like, what if the Big Bang had never happened? Would humans exist as we do now, or would we have been food for other carnivorous animals? What if religion had never begun, and assumptions about right and wrong and good and evil were fluid and easy conversations? What if electricity had not been discovered? And the show went on to describe a group, and I never did catch the name of the group, that believe Earth is populated by humans put here by aliens. Supposedly, aliens figured out years ago that there's mineral treasures, gold and the like, and they developed humans to be their worker bees, so to speak. Now, as I listened to the context, I was relatively sure this was farce, that it couldn't possibly be true. And then I gained a somewhat more generous understanding that this was someone's truth. This was someone's answers to life's complex questions. And who am I to disrespect that? Because truth is slippery. We once thought that the world was flat, that evil spirits inhabit us, that we were the only planet, and on and on and on. The truth as we know it keeps changing. So, lest we mock those who believed the story I just told you, I want to remind you, I was thinking about this, it hasn't been that long since we stopped burning witches at the stake because we were afraid of them. All too often we fear that which we don't understand, and we reject it without any real exploration. But our faith calls us back to a free and responsible, emphasis on the responsible, search for truth and meaning. And part of that truth asks us to let go of what we know for sure, to be open to mystery, to that which we might not otherwise consider. It requires us to be especially non-dogmatic when encountering views that feel oppositional or unfamiliar. Now, this is not to suggest that we must accept that which is harmful to the earth, ignores human dignity, or otherwise is unkind. But we can remain open to the mystery. I looked for the words that would explain what I was trying to say, and no one could say it better than theologian Richard Rohr. And he says, many mystics speak of the God experience as simultaneously falling into an abyss and being grounded. This sounds like a contradiction, but in fact, when you let yourself fall into the abyss, into hiddenness, limitless, unknowability, a void without boundaries, you discover it's a rich, supportive, embracing spaciousness where you don't have to ask or answer the questions of whether you're right or wrong. You're being held, and in that time, you don't have to hold yourself together. Mystery is not something you can't know. Mystery is endless knowability. Living inside such endless knowability is a comfort, a foundation of ultimate support, security, unrestricted love, and eternal care. And now for all of us, for most of us, it takes most of our life to get there, and that's what we mean by growing in faith. And I can't prove this to you. Each soul must learn it on its own, hopefully aided by other faith-filled people. And that, my friends, that's why we gather each Sunday, to let each soul search, surrounded by a faith community holding you in love. If I had a chance to talk to that four-year-old again, this is what I'd say. God is where or what holds you while you grow into your ever fuller self, the knowable and the unknowable both, surrounded by people who love you. May we be grateful for these gifts. I invite you to ground your feet, ground yourself firmly in your seat, maybe make sure your feet are planted on the floor. Lower your gaze, and just for a couple of minutes, let the mystery of possibility fill your spirit. We will be in silence together. Come back into the room as you're ready. And this is the time in the service when we invite you to make a goodwill offering, to share your gifts with this congregation so that we may continue our good work in the world. The offering will now be gratefully received.